Welcome to the AP Now podcast, the podcast that covers trends, insights, and emerging issues impacting every accounts payable function. Your host, Mary Schaefer, is the founder of AP Now, a B2B digital information and learning company focused on all issues related to AP. Stay tuned as Mary and her guests discuss the business intelligence you need to ensure a cost-effective, technologically efficient, fraud-resistant, regulatory-compliant accounts payable function. Without further ado, let's dive right in.
Welcome to episode 26 of the AP Now podcast. I'm Mary Schaefer from AP Now, and I have with me today Kimberly De Carrera, and we're going to talk today about unclaimed property fraud. She's got some really interesting stories to share with us. Today's show is brought to you by Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. Welcome, Kimberly. I think I told you when we started chatting on Twitter that I live in the state of Delaware, where unclaimed property is a really big deal. So when I saw your posting about the unclaimed property fraud, I knew I had to reach out and get you. And then we chatted and I realized I was really right. So before we start talking about that story, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up doing unclaimed property? It's not the field of law that I think most people go into.
No, it's definitely something that most people just fall into, and as did I. My background, it starts off pretty normal. I went to undergrad at Georgia Tech, knew I was going to law school, so I went to Georgia State. When I got out of law school, I started my own firm in conjunction with some family that's also a CPA. So I went and started to get my master's in tax.
Okay.
So I have that legal and that accounting background, worked with everything from small businesses to Fortune 10. And let's see, about 10 years ago or so, after a couple of twists and turns in my career, I took a job as a consultant with a unclaimed property consulting firm and stayed there for about 10 years, where now I've gone out and started my own law firm again.
Okay. Well, that's one of the nice things about law is that I guess it's, I'm not going to say it's easy to do that because I don't mean to imply that it is, but you have a skill that everybody understands and recognizes. And that at least gives you a step in the right direction. All right. Enough about my meandering on that. Before we get started talking about fraud, can you explain a little bit to the audience what unclaimed property is and why it's so important to every single company or organization out there?
Sure. The best way for me to start explaining what unclaimed property is to start with a very basic example. As an employer, if your employee does not cash or payroll check, that money is not yours. That's really the employee's money. And so unclaimed property is basically all of those checks that go uncashed. It's also things like AR credits and bank accounts and life insurance and gift cards and basically any financial product that's out there. But unclaimed property is just this set of laws where we take care of all of that that property, that financial assets that need to be somewhere else, right? It's a process that it's a state law driven, and we have to try to contact what we call the owners, so the check payees. In my example of the employee that didn't cash their check. We try to get them to cash their checks,
yeah.
Or normally because it's way past the 90-day, stuff, we send them new checks. We issue new checks. But we get them to take a cash a check and resolve the unclaimed property, or we have to report it to the state. And the state will then hold it, use it to whatever their heart's desire until the proper owner comes and claims the money from the state.
Is there ever a period of time, because I know the states have been doing this for, I guess, I don't want to say forever, but for a really long time, where the state realizes no one's coming for it and they take it into their coffers like 50 years, 100 years?
Most of the states now have what we call custodial escheat. They are just holding it as a custodian, and the owner can come back and claim it, or their heirs, as may be the case,
right?
Can come back and claim it at any time. Now, you know, realistically, once you get to a certain age, nobody's going to come in and claim that. It's just going to end up on the state books, and they use that cash for things like, you know, general fund or education or whatever special purposes. Several states use it to back bonds for, you know, construction or something like that.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. All righty. So the example that we were talking about, how did that work? How did the fraud work? And how was it uncovered?
Right. So the specific fraud that we're talking about is, and I'm not trying to embarrass them, but it just kind of, it goes to show that anybody can get hit by this. But Vanguard accounts were hit by a 23-year employee. So they'd been there for a while. They had risen to a certain level of trust within the company. The employee was able to obtain their subordinates and co-workers' passwords to issue checks on dormant bank accounts or investment accounts. And so these, when we say dormant, we're talking about deceased owners or just people that had forgotten about their accounts that hadn't been touched in 5 or 10 years or something along those lines. So the employee got these accounts, issued disbursement checks to his brother-in-law.
Okay, and different last name.
Different last name. And, you know, some of the details, they didn't give out all the details about what happened. But the employee and his brother-in-law were able to steal over $2 million in these dormant accounts.
Keep going.
Okay. Well, and I was just going to say that Vanguard would never have known about this if it wasn't for the brother-in-law coming in and confessing to the crimes.
So that brings up two points that we generally talk about in fraud, not just unclaimed property fraud, but fraud. Number one, the fact that long-term trusted employees, although in this case Vanguard appears to have had the appropriate internal controls, but this guy managed to get someone else's password. So that's kind of unfortunate. And the other thing is tip lines, anonymous tip lines. I guess the brother-in-law, they had a falling out?
I'm not sure exactly how that went down, and it's been several years now. We just know that the brother-in-law did go and to authorities and to Vanguard and confessed.
Did they both get jail time?
Yes, they did. In fact, the brother-in-law should be finishing up his jail sentence here in the next month or two. And the employee, the reason that it came back, the story came back up, is because he was just sentenced to, I think, 4 years of jail and then 3 years of supervised release after that, plus restitution and whatnot. So, yeah, they're both ending up in jail and owing all that money back.
Great, great. All righty. Before we continue, let's take a brief word from our sponsor, if you will. AP professionals know invoices are easy to lose, and it takes time to track down approvers while also having to code, log, cross-reference, verify, reconcile, and cut checks, all while staying compliant. Stamply simplifies all that. When invoices enter the system, Stamply's AI, called Billy the Bot, immediately gets to work by proposing GL codes, approvers, and flagging issues like PO mismatches and potential duplicates. AP simply confirms the information is correct and submits the invoice for approval. Now here's the best part. Stamply fixes the disconnected communications between approvers, AP, and vendors. With Stamply, conversations are centered around each invoice, and anyone can be invited to the conversation, getting to an approval decision up to 5 times faster. Visit stamply.com/APnow. See for yourself how your team can work smarter, not harder. That's stamply.com/APnow. All righty. Moving on, Kimberly, I am sure you've run into some other examples, some other cases. Could you share another example or two with us?
Sure. I was doing a voluntary disclosure agreement in Delaware. As many people are aware, Delaware has a kind of an outsized position within the unclaimed property world because they are the state of incorporation of so many different companies. They do estimation if you don't have your records. So we were going through a company and going through all of their AP records, and we started noticing trends about reissued checks. And we've seen where a bunch of checks were of various different ages were all reissued within a very short period of time, and every single one of them cashed. So that threw up some red flags for us. Yep. And we were able to determine that there was some internal fraud that happened there. And that, the tough part is then trying to backtrack and figure out what is unclaimed property, which were legitimate reissues and legitimately cashed, and which ones did not, that they were, issued to somebody and cashed outside of the rightful owner.
Do they have an eye on who did this?
I'm not going to talk about too much more about that case. I'm not sure if it has been completely resolved.
Okay.
There were some specifics about who they thought were potentially going to be the perpetrators.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, I'm thinking back to the Vanguard case, is that if the brother-in-law hadn't come forward and that whole mess had come to light, because the person used the subordinate's password, it might have looked like the subordinate was guilty.
Right. Yeah. It's people do a pretty good job of, covering their tracks. I know that in a couple of cases, if it wasn't for either an unclaimed property audit or a VDA, that these checks would have never been found. These are on, Vanguard's case. It was dormant accounts that were scheduled to be escheated. In this other case, it was really old checks.
Yeah.
And, the only reason, they'd all been bank reconciled and everything had been cleared. Are years old, even the reissues.
Yeah.
But we really would not have found but for this process of unclaimed property.
I know that the one other case that I heard about also involved an audit, but not an unclaimed property audit. They were doing a duplicate payment audit, and mm-hmm. It was the duplicate payment auditor who found it. And what they found was the guy was who tried to perpetrate this was really stupid, because it was a $300,000 check, which of course immediately drew everybody's attention to what's going on here, and he made the check payable to himself.
We really have to go in, and I'm sure on the duplicate check audits is very similar. We spend a lot of time on duplicate checks and unclaimed property because we look at every stop and void, outstanding check during an audit, and so on more than a couple of occasions, we've had to go and pull the checks as they cleared from the bank, to see who were they written out to, how was the endorsement done, all of that type of information.
What this guy was doing is he was going to remit the $300,000 to the state. He had, but he was remitting it in his name instead of the company's name that it was supposed to have
the rightful owner.
Rightful owner, and then he was going to go claim it from the state.
Most of the time when we talk unclaimed property fraud, you see it on the claim side. Most of the reported cases or the ones that make the news are all about what happens on the state side. So, you know, like you said, that they're submitting it and then they're claiming it, or we'll have fraudulent claims. But, you know, well, I think what we're talking about here is really on the corporate side, and right. How do you make sure that your AP process right. is tight and that you're not going to have this kind of fraud?
Right. So do you have some tips for the audience on that?
I definitely have some tips. It's one of the areas that we focus a lot in on unclaimed properties. There are policies and your procedures. So one of the things is always going to be is to regularly review your stops and your voids and your outstanding checks. And anytime that you're reissuing them, you're going to want to make sure that you have multiple people that have to look at the checks and approve the checks going out. You don't want one person in charge of the entire process. Right. So just that checks and balances of having somebody there that's looking at whoever is issuing the checks. And I'm talking about pulling the checks from the printer and making sure that, you know, that payee name is correct.
Right. It doesn't say Mary Schaefer.
Right, yeah, and it doesn't say Kimberly D. Carrera, you know. At least, yeah, only the ones that we're supposed to get, not all 500 that are coming off the
printer, check, yeah,
the printer at the same time. So that's definitely, you want to have those checks and balances in there. The other thing is that you want somebody that's separate from whoever is issuing the checks to do the bank reconciliations.
Right.
Those do not need to be the same people at all.
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's your first line of defense, is that bank reconciliation.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, that was very helpful. So as we close, I have two more questions for you. And this is a wild guess, and of course, neither of us know the answer to this. But how much of this type of fraud, you know, reported in the raw, in the incorrect name and then claimed, do you think goes on and is never caught?
Yeah, I really don't have any kind of thoughts on the scope here. I know that it's not insignificant. There is quite a bit of fraud in there. We've seen it at all levels. The numbers that we're talking here, you know, the states have somewhere between $40 and $50 billion that they're holding.
Right.
They've already collected. We know that the corporations have, you know, billions of dollars that they're holding. So just with that kind of money,
right.
It's an attractive target for
right.
thieves. So we, you know, we know it's there.
Yeah. Finding it is not, if people are smart, finding it is difficult, but oftentimes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm in the state of Delaware. It's, you know, a portion of our state budget, I think mm-hmm. 10 or 11%. So we're always, I'm always interested in unclaimed property. But
right.
Aside from that.
The largest revenue source
yep.
in Delaware.
Yep. The other states are not happy with us, but that's life.
Right.
But, you know, moving forward and, you know, all joking aside, do you have any closing thoughts on this whole issue?
On fraud in particular, that, you know, the companies need to be aware of it. They need to have policies and procedures in place to identify it, to prevent it. The other thing is that unclaimed property as a whole will actually help. It is best practice. Knowing that somebody is there watching those dormant accounts, those dormant checks, really does prevent a lot of fraud because they're trying to hide it. So they know if these dormant accounts are attractive because nobody's watching them. Well, if they know that somebody's watching them, it reduces that target, that, you know, the likelihood that they're going to be able to get away without punishment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So definitely, this is for all size companies. This is not just your Fortune 10. This is not just your Vanguards and your big banks. This is everybody from your big banks all the way down to your mom and pop, a retail shop, right? That everybody needs to have the strong processes in place. And do know that the auditors for the unclaimed property administrators are coming down that list. They've started at the top with the big companies and they're working down into the smaller companies. And I know several states that are focusing in on single state entities, right? Ah. That they're going after the small mom and pop shops for not reporting unclaimed property.
Oh, gee.
And their gift card programs.
Oh, the gift cards. Oh, programs. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
the so gift cards.
All of that is a risk for unclaimed property.
Okay. So before we close off, I just want to share a tip with you that actually one of my readers shared with me. I'm not smart enough to come up with this, and I'm curious what you think. So what he said, what they started to do, and I actually recommend this, is, you know, nobody wants to report and remit to the state. It's a real pain. So what they do is they go through their list of uncashed checks, especially payroll checks, and then mm-hmm. they get on LinkedIn. And they look for the people. And then when they find, for example, John Jones, who used to work at ABC Company, they contact them that way. What do you think right. about that approach?
I've actually used that approach several times, particularly for large checks, like maybe a golden parachute yeah. type of check, where we have tracked them down on LinkedIn. I've always recommended that people use everything at their disposal, right?
Right.
We're required by state law to send out a letter before we report.
Mm-hmm.
That's the minimum. That's not the maximum, right?
Right.
That's only what you have to do. It's always better to go out and find your vendors, your employees, your customers,
right.
and say, hey, we have this money for you. Now let's get it to you, or let's use it, you know. I've seen where companies have used particularly like AR credits and say, hey, why don't you apply this to your next order? Or
right.
why don't you, you know, order something new so
right.
that they get some additional sales out of it?
You have to pay out the money anyway. So why not
right.
generate a little goodwill instead of giving it to the state?
Yep. And the earlier you do it, right,
right.
the more likely you are to find somebody. So, you know, for payroll, typically it's going to be at 1 year after the check,
mm-hmm.
you know, it has been uncashed that you report it. Well, what happened, you know, why not start at 60 days, at 90 days,
right.
and you're more likely to get a forwarding address from the post office, right?
Not only that, when you do it yourself, you don't have to follow all the rigid rules that the state has for due diligence. You can do
correct.
It however you see fit.
Yep, because most states are not going to allow a LinkedIn email to
right.
be sufficient, right?
Right.
To satisfy what we call due diligence requirements.
Right.
They're going to require that letter via U.S. mail, or, you know, for banks that have these online portals, you can use those. But you definitely need to make that effort to reach out to who we call the owners, but the check payees, the account holders, your customers and your vendors, and say, we have this money for you and we need to get it back to you. And if you don't, it's going to go to the state.
Right. And that's right down the toilet. Oh, I didn't
right,
say
yeah.
that.
Right, yeah. And then it's really hard to get it back from the state.
Oh, I know.
You know.
I have
they're making it much easier than it used to be if it's all reported correctly, but we see things that sometimes it goes into that black hole and you can never find it.
Some states may be making it easier. And that's all I'm going to say on that topic. And I'm not talking about Delaware.
So there are some states that are still behind that curve that need to catch up,
yeah.
but overall they're trending in the right direction.
Good.
Some just slower than others.
Okay, so that's a very diplomatic way you have to. You're nicer than me though. Okay. Well,
it's all that law school training.
Yeah. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on, and I hope that you'll come back and visit with us again sometime in the future.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about unclaimed property probably more than you or your listeners feel like listening to it.
That's good. It's good that you're passionate about it. Okay, thanks for listening to this podcast, and a special thanks to our sponsor, Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. If you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate this episode, review this episode, subscribe to the series, or even better, share it with your community on LinkedIn, Facebook, or wherever. To be alerted to new episodes, please visit www.ap-now.com and sign up for our free e-zine. It also contains news and tips of upcoming AP Now webinars, article postings, and of course, new podcasts like this. Thanks for listening. Hope to see you again on another AP Now podcast.